The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Buddhist monastery, doing the Buddhist training. And when I finally left and returned to the city, I went to see the movie Gandhi that had just come out. And during that movie, I cried. And which was quite remarkable for me because I'd never cried at a movie before, oddly enough. And as I was leaving the movie theater, the thought occurred to me, the 3 years of monastic training, 3 years of monastic practice didn't work. And the next thought was, 3 years of monastic practice and it did work, the fact that I cried. And in fact, the number of heartbreaks that I have had since the time that I somehow came to a certain maturity in the practice, we say, far exceeds any heartbreaks I had before that maturity. And I feel like my heart breaks a lot. And I wouldn't want it to be any other way, because I would like to feel the empathy, the care, the concern, the connection to this world that we live in. And there's so much pain in our society, in our world. And I encounter maybe more than the average person, because because I meet with people one-on-one, and I often hear their stories, and I get to hear a lot of stories, what goes on. Yesterday evening, I was with a group of people, and they were sitting in a circle, introducing themselves, and a little bit to say where they're from, maybe, and a little bit about themselves. And early in the circle, this man said, I'm from Paris, and I just flew in on Saturday or Sunday, yesterday. And then he wanted to tell us that all of his people, all the people he knows and friends and family, they're all safe. And as he was saying that, he was beginning to cry, grieving. And there it was, Paris in California, not very far away, right? And then so the big events that happen on Friday, November 13th in Lebanon, some 40 people died in a terrorist attack there, and then hours later, 130 or so people in Paris. And so my heart breaks, right? And that's the way it should be, I feel. I mean, not it should be that my heart breaks. I wouldn't want that not to happen. I'd like to stay open and available, and to be a witness to what goes on in our world. And I think that's part of what the Buddhist practice has developed in me, is certainly a willingness, but also a sense of the importance of being a witness to the suffering of our world. But not just to see it, but also to feel it, so there can be empathy. And then not only to feel it, but to somehow be free in the midst of it. And that's why that broken heart is okay, because there's a kind of freedom, or kind of, I don't know what the right words are to say in the context of this, but certainly willingness or ease or non-resistance to it. A certain understanding that it's a wise thing to keep your heart open. It's wise for you, for all of us, to keep it open. And it's wise to live in a society where we're willing to be a witness to our friends and around the globe who go through these things. So to see and to feel, and then to understand in some deep way. And I like these two together, to see and to feel, and then to understand. Because oftentimes people rush to judgment. and rush to all kinds of ideas. And when it's all in the head, there's often not much empathy and care and concern and goodwill as part of that. So to feel, and then to understand, and then to act, and be changed by the world. And when we feel major events like this in our lives, and they have the bigger the impact they have on us as individuals, the more it's appropriate that we be changed by them. And if we're not changed by them, I think we do a kind of disservice to ourselves. And it's all too often it seems that people get all aroused, upset, concerned by something. And then a few days later, it's forgotten. It's no longer really part of their lives. But I think when it has a big impact, we should be changed by it. We should become a different person because of it. We should allow ourselves to change. And part of the... One of the ways that I think Buddhist practice really helps in this kinds of regard is first a recognition that I don't know how to say this also, but we can kind of expect these things to happen. Buddhism kind of expects that there's going to be all kinds of loss and tragedy and things. I mean, they've been expecting it for 2,500 years. And there's a good track record of predicting it. These things will happen, right? And I think they're going to continue for a long time. So it's not exactly a surprise, not like an offense to our sense of life that these things happen. I mean, it does happen. Doesn't mean they're right and they should happen. But there's not like, you know, a surprise. It's more like in Buddhism, oh yes, how terrible, yes, here it is again. And so we don't close down or go numb out of the surprise and shock. This shouldn't happen. Of course it shouldn't happen, but we shouldn't. And then the Buddhist practice has taught me to be how important it is not to close down, not to turn away. Because to close down closes some part of ourselves. We shut down. We become numb. And I've seen people... in these kinds of regards, in these kinds of tragedies, begin to shut down and not really be willing to kind of feel what's happening to them, not really willing to let their heart break. And sometimes in Buddhist circles, it takes the form of, or many circles of, so the English word riling against life, railing against it. What is it, riling, railing? Railing? That's my problem that with words, me in the English language. Where's the justice in the society and the world, and what good is karma, or what does it mean, and something's wrong, or where's God in this picture, and kind of it's all kind of abstracted in a philosophical way and looking outside. And Buddhism tends not to want to philosophize about these things, tends not to want to make the grand conclusions about the nature of life and justice and all these things, but rather to allow ourselves to feel these things and to notice where we get hung up, to notice where we get caught and closed down and contracted. And then Buddhism has the practices for releasing the contraction, to open up the when the heart is all fisted up, and to release it, but not just so we can go whistling down the street happily as if nothing to do with us, but so that our heartbreaks can be pure, so our heartbreaks can be open and kind of have a kind of freedom in it or willingness to it, or I don't know if I want to say. Where heartbreak feels satisfying. How's that as an interesting idea? Satisfying heartbreak. I don't know if that's not quite the right word even. No, it doesn't feel work? Satisfying heartbreak? A rightness to it, maybe. The first time this happened to me was, I was in college, and I was walking down the college hallway, and there was some person who worked in an office there. I never found out what happened, but the person probably was on the phone, got some news, and went out of her office screaming in an awful way, like something terrible had happened, in distress, not in grief, kind of. And I was heartbroken by it. And given that it happened, the rightness of it was that I really felt it, to really be there with it and feel it. That this is right to feel, it's right to be present for this. It doesn't, I'm not saying it should be that way or right, but so it's a willingness. And then we can meet each other, then we can see each other, then we can care for each other, we can understand each other and meet each other in real ways. And then maybe we can, and then to act. And how do we want to act? How do we want to change? What do we want to do that's different? So here in the United States, we had a similar day like they had in Paris with 9/11, and that had a big impact on me. And I felt like I can't go back to how things were anymore. I had to be changed by it, do something different. And so what I did was I started a year-long training program to train people to become Buddhist chaplains. And So that was my response to 9/11. And I've been teaching this now for about 12 years to people. It took a while to kind of get organized and set up. And it's been very meaningful for me to train all these people who go out and they work in many different settings, and where people are in situations of tragedy, crisis, personal crisis. You know, it's in hospitals, in prisons, in hospices. I've trained people to be homeless chaplaincy, variety of things. And so I don't know how some of you were impacted by what happened in Paris and in Lebanon on Friday, or do you allow yourself to be impacted by the fact that in Baltimore, 300 people have, that there have been 300 homicides this year so far. That's quite a number. That's more than the people that have died in these bombings on Friday. And, you know, here in our backyard. You know, how do we let this stuff come in and take it in? How do we do it so we don't get weighed down by it? How do we do it so we don't close down? How do we do it so we don't get caught up in the sorrow, which heartbreak is, the sorrow of it? I mean, that's really the art and the essence of it. And I really hope and pray that the Buddhist practice that we do, mindfulness practice we do, is preparing us to be ready for these things, be prepared for it, to be open, to be kind of witnesses, be responders, be a compassionate presence for this world. Because we've learned how to take it in. We've learned not to let it get stuck, not to close down, not to get angry, not to get hostile or something. And because it's going to keep happening. And as it gets closer to us, if it gets closer to us, we need people who are prepared and ready. You know, we're not going to put their head in the sand like an ostrich, or not run away or freeze, or also not quickly get into the fight. You know, there's many times you quickly want to, you know, and these governors who are closing down their states to the refugees. But to me, I find it astounding that, that's the response, is to shut, you know. There must be an alternative. I can understand that they're afraid now that they've, you know, because of the circumstances, but to not consider alternatives, not to consider the people involved, and I think it does a tremendous disservice to those states, that those states now are closing down, as opposed to, like, here's an issue, here's a problem, how do we solve it? How do we look for a way that protects the humanity of everyone, supports everyone. So finally, the response. And one of the things that I've benefited, learned from Buddhist practice, is that so much hinges in a wise life on how we respond. In many ways, I think that Buddhism is a forward-looking religion, as opposed to looking into the past. The past isn't that important for Buddhism. Our past is not so important for Buddhist practice. It's only important to the degree to which we learn from the past. and learning from our mistakes, learning from what goes on, learning from what happens, but not to be weighed down by the past, but to learn from it, and then as we look forward into the future, to see how we can do better in the future, how we can act, and to have the freedom to respond, I think is, and to respond with wisdom and compassion and love and friendship and goodwill, and to keep coming back from that, because, again, to you know, to call on you know what I've learned from Buddhism, is Buddhism understands or teaches that the world begins with you, and the world begins anew each time you wake up, each time you blink your eyes, each time you breathe in and you breathe out. There's a whole cycle of life and death, the rising and passing goes on. And there's really a fresh beginning that goes on every moment. And we don't have to be weighed down by what happened. We don't have to be troubled by it. We don't have to be, or I don't know, trouble is the right word, but we don't have to be weighed down by it or contract because of it. But rather we can be motivated by it. We can, it can fuel our freedom. It can fuel us in our practice, fuel us in our desire to create a better world. And then we be forward-looking. And this, the courage and the inspiration and the dedication, devotion, to create a better world for ourselves, better world for our neighbors and people all over the world, that yes. So this forward-looking movement, because it's, and it really, the importance of it starting with us, because where else is it going to start for you? You know, that person over there, it's supposed to start over there, you know. So to start here, and so this is part of the emphasis on being in the present moment in Buddhism is not just to be in the present moment, but to really see the beginning of the world here, because that's where your world is, and then what difference are you going to make? How are you going to be a better person? How are you going to make a difference in this world? How are you going to improve it for the people around you? So when things like the bombing in Paris and Lebanon happens, shootings there, that, you know, to see it, to be willing to see it, to feel it, to understand it in some way, and then to be, you know, because of your freedom, because of your not being caught in the past, caught in concepts and caught in self, to have the ability then and the motivation to act, to respond, you know, and let the hope, let the goodness that exists in this world begin with you. And it doesn't mean you have to go to Paris to do something there. It doesn't mean you have to go to Syria. But it means that here in this life, you live in such a way that you make a difference for the people that around you, that you wouldn't do if you got weighed down by this, if you closed down because of it. So to see, be willing to be a witness, not just to see but to feel it, and to feel it and let your heart break in these kinds of tragedies, needs to be done with a lot of respect and care for yourself. It might take quite a while to process that and to be present for it and learn how to kind of feel in a clean way of without fear or anger or, you know, distress or dismay, but just to really feel it. And then to understand more deeply and figure out what kind of response is your response, so you're not going back to just life as usual and have forgotten about it within a few weeks. It's very important for all of us that we live in a life where we try to improve the lives of others and support each other. And so, and in doing so, we become ready for the next time. And the next time. There will be a next time. And we also become ready for those times when our hearts don't break, but when our hearts can sing. And the very capacity to really have our hearts break in a clean way, in a full way, is also the same capacity that allows our hearts to sing fully, when glow fully, when the circumstances call for that. And to be free, one of the meanings that I understand to be really free is to be able to respond fully to the circumstances of the time that you're in. So one day, talking to one friend, your heart breaks. Talking to the next friend a few hours later, your heart sings because of that freedom to go, move back and forth. Freedom does not mean that we, in Buddhism, that we end up sitting in a cloud of bliss, unconcerned, unconnected to those, you know, the dust of the world that happens somewhere else. You know, but to really is to become fully human, so we can live in this world with all of what it is, in a wise and caring way. So those are my thoughts. I could talk about anything else tonight. So anything that you'd like to add or comment on or ask questions about or. Boy, sorry. Did you have anything?
I'd like to know, in your experience, what is the best way to find where you are having that blockage, where you are contracting.
Oh, nice. So, but you asked me personally for me, but I'm motivated to ask you a little bit more about why you're asking.
I'm curious in my life right now.
I'm curious in your life.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. But what's the evidence that makes you curious? What's the circumstance?
I have a very strong sensation in my lower abdomen. Mm-hmm. You can call it pain. We can mm-hmm. call it whatever we want. Uh-huh. And it feels contracted.
Uh-huh. And what happens if you rest your attention there?
Different things.
But something happens. So one of the things to do is to, that's one of the primary things that I like to do, is to feel what's going on in my body. The body is not just a hunk of flesh. The body is really alive with our inner life, inner experience. And so to go find where there's tension, tightness, energy, activation, and then rest the attention there as long as we can, and it makes sense, maybe in short periods, just a minute or two, and then pull back, and then different things happen. It begins to shift and change and reveal itself and move, and you know, what needs to happen begins to unfold. That's what I've learned.
May I ask you one more question?
Please.
When you're resting your attention on something that our mind might typically label as negative or bad, how do you embrace it with love and allow it to be where you accept it?
Well, just the language you're using is kind of interesting. It out there, like this thing. What happens if you say it's yours? It's you. Not yours, but it's you. It's okay. It's okay to cry in here. This is a crying place.
It is me.
Is it easier now? Is it easier to be with? It was?
Yes.
So one of the things I've learned about the so-called negative things is they're not negative. That everything that's within us is there for causes and conditions. And that if we can learn to trust to be present for it and open for it, that it's really connected to the depth within us and to the depth of what needs to unfold and happen for us. And so to bring attention to it and not keep it at a distance, not close down from it, but to I've learned that we really trust it and it unfolds. And and if we learn how to get out of the way, at the same time be very present in a simple way, ideally kind way, there's something in the psychophysical system that brings it to healing, to health, to freedom. In this very similar way, kind of in a mundane example, you know, if you cut your finger, maybe cutting vegetables, you can't orchestrate in your little mind how to heal it. But your body knows how to heal it. It's a very complicated physiological event to heal a cut. But it happens. All you have to do is keep it clean. So if same thing is true for our hearts. You have to kind of keep it clean from your negativity, from seeing it as negative, and just be present for it, and not succumb to it, not have self-pity, not have resistance. And meditation is a great place for that. It's a safe place. Just sit there, and feel it all, and see it through.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So there's someone behind you wants to speak.
I appreciate your share on what happened in Paris. I found myself reacting almost cynically. I can be very empathetic when a friend loses their little puppy or whatever happens to them, you know. But I think over the years, so many awful things have happened that I've seen and experienced that I just, it's hard for me to be really sensitive to that stuff without going overboard and wanting to use drugs and alcohol or just whatever, shoot myself. And I'm not prone to that, but I'm saying the world can be really sucky. And if I somehow protected myself over the way where I now I'm at a point where sometimes I'm not really nice about it at all. And I'm afraid if I really were to experience that completely, as you're suggesting, I could see that would be a valuable experience, that it would probably tear me up. And how would one prevent that, to experience it without having to go all the way over the edge?
Good question. It's a very, very important question. Sometimes it's makes really a big difference if you can do the inner work that needs to be done to come to a place of really good place where you don't succumb, you don't drown, don't kind of go over the edge with these tragedies. If you do that inner work in community with others, so you're not alone doing it. So there's support, there's feedback, there's learning from others, there's a lot of support. And then there's practices like what we do here, meditation practices, mindfulness practice, compassion practices, that help us find our way through it. There's other spiritual practices, other practices that do this as well. It takes time, it takes courage, it takes persistence, it really takes really kind of following through. It's not a simple fix. It's not like, someone waves a wand but it can be done. But it takes real dedication. And I know some people, in response to these kinds of tragedies, their first response is not to go and save the world, not to go to do something for the world, but rather is to go to the monastery for 3 years, to do that kind of inner work that overcomes any tendencies for cynicism or shutting down or all the things you described. Because it's not necessarily so easy to do it, but it's really some people that they do that kind of extreme. But some people stay in the world and do it here, but do it in community, do it with other people, and get support.
I was just watching Ken Burns' movie on the Roosevelts, and Franklin didn't want to show his pain, and he kept on a brave, optimistic front. And I think that there are degrees of choice we have to make about how much we're willing to share our feelings, depending on if it feels safe or appropriate. And that's always a question I deal with because I'm so sensitive and I feel very open, but sometimes it's not appropriate to express tears in a particular situation.
It's true. Sometimes it's not appropriate. It's true. But it becomes easier to share it with others if we've learned if there's no self involved, if there's no identification with it, no attachments and clinging to it, no fear or connected to it, where these tears and these feelings that we have are come through us in a clean way. And that takes a while to come to that place, and it's a beautiful and noble endeavor to do the slow work to kind of to clear out the what's extra around our feelings, so that when we do cry and have tears and have emotions and we're quite open, that openness, everything that comes through cleanly.
So that's good, to let it come through.
It's very good once it can become through.
Unless you're Franklin Roosevelt, speaking to the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know that's part of Franklin Roosevelt, but I do know that the more famous a person becomes, the more people see them as a caricature. So that what they represent becomes more important than who they are. And so, and that's probably a choice, or that's part of the responsibility even of people who have those kinds of roles in a society, that they're not really themselves for the world anymore. So maybe there's a requirement then in that role, the decision not to share yourself publicly. Because that's not who you are. You're not a public person. You're not a private. I don't know how to say it, but you're a caricature. You represent something. Mm-hmm. So could we? Yes, Sylvie. So I'd like to have some women speak. Maybe after Sylvie, if we can have another woman speak too.
So. I'm French, and I was very affected with the tragedy, and my first reaction was to shut down and be completely numb. I couldn't even open my mouth yesterday. And then in the evening, I did kind of what you describe. I really tried to feel what were the emotion and locate them in my body and soothe them. And I cried. It was actually quite beautiful because then I was dissociating myself from being French.
I missed that. What was it again?
I kind of dissociated my reaction from being French. Yeah. You know, I spent the whole day reading all the internet, all the French newspapers and Twitter and all of those things. And I was able to kind of like feel that, you know, it was really a tragedy for humanity and realize that, you know, this happened in Jerusalem, in many cities. And even kind of like feel, you know, for the attackers, the young men who killed themselves, you know, and feel like really compassion for them and feeling how do you, you know, how do you come to not value your life to actually go do something like this at 28? You know, it's very sad. Like, how were they raised? And, you know, even though they did something tragic and horrifying, you know, what they did to themselves is I think also tragic. And so I felt I was kind of overwhelmed by all of this. But interestingly, today I got inspired to do something for the world. And I happen to be advising a company who has a music platform that enables people to sing, and really spent the day trying to convince everybody to launch an initiative to sing for Paris, and should go live tomorrow. The argument that I had to go against, like how people didn't want to do something, and it was very healing for me, because the only way to really kind of convince people is, I think it's because I cried and I touched the pain, and I could really talk about the compassion and suffering, and how, you know, art is healing, singing is healing. When things like this happen, you know, art can do something.
Absolutely.
Try to overcome all the arguments. You know, I cannot believe that people were against the idea of doing something when you have a product that can actually do good and you're just sitting on the sideline doing nothing. That was kind of revolting to me. You know, it's kind of like you have your usual like little like happy songs that are like flying around all day, and it's just like ridiculous. But I was comforted to, you know, to hear about the process that you were talking about in your talk tonight, and feel the release. Like, I don't know, did you say a satisfying heartbreak?
You didn't like that word at first.
I'm still not quite happy with that word. I had a maybe useful heartbreak.
I don't know if there is a good adjective.
I don't know if there is a, yeah. But yeah, kind of doing something feels very relieving and kind of identifying with what is happening, I really hope that there isn't going to be a war. I don't think that killing more people is really the answer. Right.
Okay, thank you very much. So let's end. We're probably time to end. We're going to end. But I'd like to end with a minute or so of silence, just to sit and get back into quiet. breathe in. We breathe in the world. And as we breathe out, if you so choose, you can breathe out your compassion, your love, your care, and your goodwill for the whole world. The whole world passes through you with every breath. And may every exhale be a time where your generosity of spirit spreads out into this world with the wish that all beings be happy, that all beings be safe, and may all beings learn to see each other as brothers and sisters. May all beings be happy.